Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, your host for the show and also founder of the UK charity Yes to Life that helps people with cancer explore and understand their options within what's called integrative medicine. This includes a broad range of complementary and lifestyle approaches that are not currently part of conventional oncology as practiced by our NHS. Today, we shall be exploring the world of repurposed drugs, an unusual territory in which conventional medicines are repurposed for use in cancer based on the understanding of cancer that's prevalent outside of conventional circles, known as metabolic science. It's an interesting arena, somewhere midway between conventional and unconventional science, that practitioners say has the disadvantage of meaning they get shot at by both sides. Nonetheless, it's a very important new field, coming from nowhere a decade or so ago, to be a serious consideration for a large number of both patients and practitioners. One of the early explorers was Dr. Jeffrey Dash, who documented the results of his researches in the book Cracking Cancer Toolkit.
Hi, Dr. Dash. Thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me, Robin Daly.
So the focus of today's chat is a recent book of yours, which is called Cracking Cancer Toolkit. It's got the subtitle Using Repurposed Drugs for Cancer Treatment. Before we get stuck into the actual book, it'd be great to hear a bit about you and what led to the publication of this book. I mean, for example, you told me that your area of clinical practice is bioidentical hormone replacement and natural thyroid. So how come you're writing in depth about specific mechanisms of cancer?
You're quite correct, Robin. My background is I was originally board certified in interventional radiology.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in that field doing diagnostic and interventional radiology for about 25, 30 years at the hospital here in Florida, in the South Broward area. And I developed eye trouble and had to retire about 20 years ago. And, you know, I looked around, went to meetings, and eventually decided to open a small clinic, outpatient clinic in Davie, Florida, where I started doing, and I still do, I specialize in bioidentical hormone replacement for menopause and also male hormone replacement. And I also specialize in natural thyroid for various thyroid disorders. During that time period, three members of my family came down with aggressive cancers.
Right.
My mom, my son, and my mother-in-law, my wife's mom. And then I realized that, you know, I had to get up to speed in cancer treatment. I started reading the medical literature on cancer and started writing articles about it. I have a monthly newsletter. It goes out. So a lot of those articles are in the monthly newsletter, which are preserved on my blog. So you can go back and look at those. I realized that, you know, there's a different language in the oncology medical literature. A lot of it is abbreviations, it's a jargon. It's sort of like it's like a foreign language, and learning a foreign language takes time and effort. It took me 4 years to finally come up to speed and being able to read through and understand the oncology medical literature. A lot of it is preclinical studies in vitro cell cultures and in vivo animal studies. The animals are injected with cancer cells and then various treatments given to the animals to see, you know, how they do. So that's a very common model for various types of cancers is the in vivo animal models. And that's the genesis of the book Cracking Cancer Toolkit. And again, just to clarify, I don't treat cancer patients in my practice. I'm not a specialist in that area. If people are interested in, you know, integrative oncology, we do have a list of integrative oncology practitioners, so we send that list out to the patient. When we do get a lot of inquiries, people read the book and they assume I treat cancer patients which I don't. I refer them to, you know, we have a list of about a dozen highly regarded integrative oncologists, and they can pick and choose among those.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, you can understand why people might jump to that conclusion if you're going to be writing books about it. But yeah, interesting. But you've obviously looked at cancer therapy as a whole, but this book you focused on one particular approach, which is to do with repurposing. And what made you choose that to write about in particular?
I think it's a very good approach, you know, if we look at a lot of the research on cancer, a lot of it is repurposed drugs and botanicals, natural substances, you know, the other aspects of cancer, you know, you deal with things like emotional state, interpersonal relationships. I think that's also very important. And, in the book, I apologize for not covering those types of things.
Right.
You know, diet is also a big component of cancer treatment. And again, in the book, I mentioned that, you know, I apologize for not covering that more completely. My background makes the topic of repurposed drugs more interesting to me. And, in terms of conventional cancer treatment, you know, the big problem with basically chemotherapy is the medical treatment for cancer, as you know. And the big problem is chemotherapy does not eradicate cancer stem cells.
Mm-hmm.
We now know that there are two types of cells in the cancer mass. They're the bulk tumor cells, which are mostly glycolytic using the Warburg effect. And then there are cancer stem cells, which are dormant and hibernating and not actively replicating. The chemotherapy is an old technology from the 1940s, originally from the 1940s, which is basically a poison which poisons rapidly replicating cells. If the cells are not rapidly replicating, the cancer stem cells are dormant, hibernating, and they're relatively resistant to chemotherapy. So what happens with chemotherapy is the bulk of the tumor will die in a form of cancer cell death called necrosis. In necrotic cell death, there's a sudden rupture of the cell membrane and cell contents are released, spewed out into the circulation. And that incites a severe inflammatory reaction with tremendous stimulation of inflammatory cytokines. This inflammation activates the resistant cancer stem cells. They become activated and lead to recurrent cancer, which is much more aggressive and more chemotherapy resistant than the original tumor cells. That's what we typically will see with chemotherapy treatment in aggressive cancers, that type of pattern. The question in my mind was, well, how do we deal with that? In the book, we talk about downregulating inflammatory pathways. For example, there are a number of studies on a COX-2 inhibitor, which is commonly used, called Celebrex, celecoxib. Those researchers studied, in animal models, they gave celecoxib along with chemotherapy in their animal model and found curative efficacy. So a simple thing like that, downregulating inflammatory pathways with an NSAID drug, makes a huge world of difference. Another useful intervention is an antiplatelet drug. It turns out that the platelets contain growth factors that are utilized by the cancer cells. And just by inhibiting platelet activation with a drug like dipyridamole, which is very commonly used, it's been around for a long time, even aspirin, which is a platelet inhibitor, is effective. That will improve cancer survival tremendously. The one study that I mentioned in the book, was done, published in Lancet in the 1980s. About 30 metastatic melanoma patients were randomized and treated with dipyridamole. The patients on the dipyridamole had doubled their survival compared to the non-treated patients. So you know, there's studies like that. They're very impressive. So the, you know, the chemotherapy paradigm is really an old, obsolete technology. It's persisting and it's allowed to continue because of entrenched financial interests. You know, there's a thing called the chemotherapy concession in the United States. I don't know what they do in England, but the way it works is the oncologist buys the chemotherapy wholesale from the drug manufacturer and then sells it retail to the patient. So, you know, there's a financial incentive to continue. You know, there's just entrenched financial interests that that have continued the chemotherapy paradigm. It's a shame because conventional oncology admits now that chemotherapy cannot eradicate cancer stem cells, and that is the number one problem with conventional oncology.
Yeah, but it's good. I mean, the difference now is we have a good explanation of why chemotherapy doesn't work that well. That cycle of seeming to be effective, oh, yes, the tumor's reducing at a great rate, you know, it's all looking good. And then a little bit further down the line, suddenly the person's got a much more aggressive form of cancer and they've lost control of it. And, you know, that pattern was quite familiar. There's no less enthusiasm for giving the chemotherapy, but that was a common situation, but nobody really understood what was going on. And now you've just explained what's going on, and there is general recognition about this importance of these particular cancer cells, which were not really given any airtime before. So I'd just like to just home in a bit for a second on stem cells, cancer stem cells, and just make it clear to everybody exactly what is it about a cancer stem cell that sets it aside from a regular cancer cell? What's the difference?
The cancer stem cells are have the ability, it's called plasticity. They can switch among different metabolic pathways. You know, the bulk tumor cells tend to be glycolytic. This is the Warburg effect, which was described originally in the 1920s by Otto Warburg, received the Nobel Prize for that. The Warburg effect means there are a number of alterations. You know, this is basically the metabolic theory of cancer, which was proposed by Thomas Seyfried in his book. The idea is that the metabolic derangement is in the mitochondria, and the main derangement is the Warburg effect, which is it's called aerobic glycolysis, which means that glycolysis is favored even in the presence of high oxygen levels. There's also a peculiar rearrangement of hexokinase, which is the first enzyme in the metabolism of glucose. The hexokinase is relocated to the mitochondrial surface, to their little pores on the outer membrane of the mitochondria called voltage-dependent anion channels, VDAC for short, VDAC. The hexokinase, the first enzyme, is relocated right to those VDAC channels. And it is a different form of hexokinase. It's an embryonic form called hexokinase 2. That's used in cancer cells. So that's a very peculiar chain or derangement. And what that does is when you place the hexokinase 2 right on the VDAC, that creates immortality of the cancer cell. Normal cells will undergo programmed cell death. The Greek word for it is called apoptosis. The cancer cell, because of the relocation of hexokinase 2 on the VDAC, is now immortalized and will not undergo apoptosis. So a number of researchers looked at this and realized that valid anti-cancer strategy would be to pull away the hexokinase 2 from the VDAC. If we could pull those away and separate those two items, those two molecules from each other, that would be an excellent anti-valid strategy. And so there are a number of substances, repurposed drugs and botanicals that will do that, which we describe in the book. And the one of the benefits is the cancer cell can now undergo apoptosis. We've restored the ability of the cancer cell to commit suicide.
Right, which it should do because of the fact that it's not working correctly.
Exactly.
And any cell in the body that's not working correctly is supposed to act under orders and commit suicide and for the sake of the whole body.
Exactly.
But that's what cancer cells don't do. Yeah. So you're actually restoring order there, as it should be, by unblocking this channel, if you like.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Here is that we mentioned the form of cell death induced by chemotherapy, cancer cell death by chemotherapy, which is called necrotic cell death, which is a sudden burst of the membrane and release of cellular contents suddenly. So apoptosis is a very different form of cell death in which it's very orderly and the cell contents are recycled and reused and not spilled out into the circulation as in necrosis. So the apoptotic cell death does not induce the tremendous inflammatory stimulus that chemotherapy will do. So it's much more favorable and much more benign form of cancer cell death. In the book we talk about, well, what are the substances that and there are a number of these substances that pull away the hexokinase 2 from the VDAC. They're available at the local drugstore. They're old drugs known for a long time. And the two that we highlight are itraconazole, which is an old antifungal, and fenofibrate, which is an old anti-lipid drug. Which reduces triglycerides. They're still in use. Itraconazole is called Spironox. It's still around as an antifungal. And fungal infection, keep cancer patients on the ward, on the oncology ward, are frequently immunosuppressed. Chemotherapy will cause immunosuppression bone marrow suppression and reduction in white count. So the patients are very typically immunosuppressed frequently. And the oncologists will frequently give them antifungal drugs. And this is one of them, itraconazole, Spironox. When they do that, the patient is unwittingly receiving an excellent anti-cancer drug.
Inadvertently.
The other one is fenofibrate, which is also will detach hexokinase 2 from the VDAC, and that's an excellent anti-cancer drug. There are a number of natural substances. One which is commonly known is the non-psychoactive component of cannabis, which is called CBD, cannabidiol. And that study was done by Rimmerman in 2013 in Israel, showing excellent separation of the hexokinase 2 from the VDAC. And that's, you know, CBD is commonly used adjunctively by integrative oncologists.
Mm, yeah.
CBD oil, CBD paste, et cetera.
Well, which explains why it's useful. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So, yeah. So just hopping back to our stem cells again, so you said that plastic, I think was the word you used.
Plasticity. Yes. The stem cells can switch metabolic pathways. So there are also what's called cancer stem cell pathways, which can be targeted. For example, ivermectin is, if you use high throughput screening of, you know, a library of 1,000, 2,000 drugs looking for activity against cancer stem cell pathway, the main one is the WNT, W-N-T pathway, which stands for wingless integration site, which was first described in fruit flies, Drosophila fruit flies. That WNT pathway, again, it's an embryonic pathway, and it's upregulated in cancer cells, and that's the main pathway for cancer stem cells. So if you can find a repurposed drug that will target the WNT pathway, you can eradicate cancer stem cells. So it turns out ivermectin, which is an antiparasitic drug, ranks at the top when you do a high-throughput screening of a library of a couple thousand drugs, which is now a current technology.
Right.
We can now do that with current molecular biology techniques. There are a number of other antiparasitic drugs which also target the WNT pathway, obliterate cancer stem cells. In a book, in the appendix, we list all of the WNT pathway drugs in the book. And there are quite a few of them. Let me just turn to that page. WNT pathway inhibitors. Artesunate, which is an anti-malaria, it's the first line anti-malaria drug. You know, when we talk about artesunate, that's usually in the same paragraph as ivermectin. Ivermectin was discovered by two doctors. They received the Nobel Prize in 2015. William Campbell, who was an American, worked for Merck, which at the time worked for Merck Drug Company. And then the other was a Japanese researcher at the Tokyo Institute by the name of Satoshi Omura. So they both received the Nobel Prize in Medicine, along with a Chinese doctor by the name of Tu Youyou, who discovered artemisinin as a treatment for malaria, and artemisinin then became first line treatment for malaria. It comes in these little 60 milligram vials.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
And you also have artesunate tablets, which are, you know, a derivative of artemisinin in tablet form. So artemisinin is a WNT pathway inhibitor. I'm just reading through the list. Curcumin, ECGC, which is from green tea, itraconazole, ivermectin, as we mentioned, melatonin, which is, you know, at the vitamin store for sleep. Niclosamide, another antiparasitic drug. Another interesting little tidbit of information, which most people don't know, is that one of the other major metabolic pathway, we mentioned glycolysis, Warburg effect. The other one, of course, is oxidative phosphorylation in the mitochondria. So cancer stem cells will shift between the three major metabolic pathways. If you block glycolysis, it shifts to oxidative phosphorylation. If you block those two, both oxphos and glycolysis, the cancer stem cell will then shift to a hibernation dormant state, which is called protective autophagy.
Very important point, isn't it? Is that actually this flexibility is the thing that enables it to survive all sorts of treatment approaches. And if you don't understand this, you're going to miss it, basically.
Exactly. And this has been identified by numerous researchers, and what they do is they will block all three metabolic pathways with glycolysis inhibitor. For example, dichloroacetate is a glycolysis inhibitor. Fenbendazole which is a common veterinary drug, as I call it, is a microtubule inhibitor and also a glycolysis inhibitor. And then for the OxPHOS inhibitors, there are a number of these. For example, anything that perturbs the electron transport chain, such as metformin, the first-line diabetic drug, metformin is an OxPHOS inhibitor by virtue of the fact that it inhibits complex one of the electron transport chain. There are quite a few others. It turns out that all OxPHOS inhibitors also are Wnt pathway inhibitors. There's this connection between OxPHOS inhibition and Wnt pathway inhibition. So all OxPHOS inhibitors are cancer stem cell drugs. Just to finish the list on Wnt pathway inhibitors, Parvinium, another antiparasitic drug, pterostilbene, which is a derivative of resveratrol, vitamin A derivatives, milk thistle, sulforaphane, tocotrienol, vitamin E. We sort of mixed together the supplements from the vitamin store along with the repurposed drugs in the same list. The cancer stem cells can be eradicated by targeting the Wnt pathway, and all OxPHOS inhibitors do it. What the researchers do, if you read the oncology literature, that they will do high throughput screening, looking for the best and most effective drug at the lowest concentration, and the safest drug that will target the Wnt pathway.
Well, that's a great piece of information to get your hands on, I can tell.
Yeah.
Very interesting. So in total, give me an idea of the number of repurposed drugs that are getting used in cancer. Are we talking about 15?
Yeah. Well, if you look at all of the repurposed, anti-cancer drugs at the local drugstore on the corner, it's about 300.
300?
About 300. Right. In terms of botanicals that have anti-cancer activities, plants and botanicals. It's about 3,000.
Yeah.
3,000. So, for example, there's one of my favorite movies is Medicine Man, starring Sean Connery and Lorraine Bracco. And Sean Connery plays a biologist who's in the Amazon rainforest, discovers a rare flowering plant way up high up in the canopy that is a cure for cancer. And Lorraine Bracco was, sent to investigate, what the guy is doing down there in the Amazon rainforest. And the movie is interesting, but it's really the big lie is that the cure for cancer is some obscure, rare flowering plant in the Amazon. The reality is, if you look out your kitchen window or your living room window at the greenery, the landscaping across the street or down the street, chances are you're going to be looking at plants that have anti-cancer activity that could very well be the next anti-cancer drug. The problem is not finding that rare flowering plant. The problem is we already have thousands of anti-cancer plant substances, and we have 300 repurposed drugs in the drugstore. The problem is how do we get them to work together in synergy?
Yeah.
And so that's what we discuss in the book, and we organize it based on the metabolic theory of cancer, which is, you have these three major pathways, glycolysis in the cytoplasm, oxidative phosphorylation in mitochondria, and autophagy. And we want to target all three. And then we have two other major pathways that we want to consider, which is cancer will hijack the immune system, downregulate the host immune system. They can escape from host immunity. So we want to address that. And there are a couple of repurposed drugs for that. One is cimetidine, and the other one is a mushroom extract available from Japan called AHCC, which beta-glucan for short. They will both upregulate the immune system. And then the last major pathway is inflammation, which we touched on earlier with the chemotherapy. Cancer feeds on inflammation. The inflammatory pathways will feed the cancer and make it more aggressive. So we want to downregulate inflammation, and many of the highly effective antiparasitic drugs that we talked about also will downregulate and inhibit the master inflammatory controller, which is called nuclear factor kappa B. So, and the downstream inflammatory pathway is called COX-2, which is the cyclooxygenase pathway, which is inhibited by, you know, the NSAID drugs, the celecoxib. The drug we mentioned earlier is a COX inhibitor. So those drugs are very useful for inhibiting the inflammatory pathways. Ivermectin is very, very anti-inflammatory. You know, you remember, I don't know if you've ever seen people with like red face. Mm-hmm. It's called rosacea. It's very common in the population. They now have FDA-approved a topical ivermectin cream, which you rub on the face, and it's a cure for rosacea. Before that, these people had no real cure for rosacea. So ivermectin is an excellent topical anti-inflammatory for rosacea.
Interesting.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list? Then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato. Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month. Let's all put health first.
The station that makes you feel good.
We've not got much time left. There's a few things I'd like to go into to do with the whole field of repurposing. Question number one is your book. Who's it aimed at? Is this for people with cancer or is it a resource for practitioners?
Both, really. It's really written for the general population. And, you know, in the book, we suggest to the reader, you know, give this book to your oncologist, give this book to your doctor, because, oncologists are basically, have, you know, wearing blinders and, once they finish, their fellowship, they basically ignore any further advances in medical science, and they just get, you know, are dispensing chemotherapy. The doctors who read my book are called integrative oncologists, and we have a list of integrative oncologists for people who are interested and if I want to find a doctor who is familiar with the concepts involved in using repurposed drugs.
Just to follow up on that, so given the complexity of the situation, which is, you just said, there's 3,300 choices here, there's different pathways to target, there's different mechanisms for cancer to target, what's your take on whether people should be trying to work this out for themselves or should be consulting one of those integrative doctors?
No, we talk about this in the book. I strongly recommend working with an integrative oncologist because... You know, some of these drugs do have adverse side effects. You need to follow, the blood count and the chem panel. You need to follow basic laboratory parameters. You especially in combinations. Drug combinations have to be followed closely. For example, if you're using two OXPHOS inhibitors, for example, a statin drug is a mitochondrial toxin. If you add a second mitochondrial toxin, like fenofibrate, you can get worsening mitochondrial toxicity, which causes muscle pain, muscle degeneration. The best scenario is to work with a knowledgeable physician who knows, what parameters to follow, what adverse side effects to look for, what combinations to avoid. We talk about certain combinations to avoid in the book.
Right. Unfortunately, of course, there's some people who can't afford an integrative oncologist. For those people, they could, if they were astute and they studied your book carefully, that it might be able to help them to make their own choices.
That's a good point, Robin. I think, in terms of, what if we have a patient who, doesn't have the financial resources to use an integrative oncologist, and they're pretty much on their own, and they have an aggressive cancer. I think there's enough information in the book for them to at least get started with a reasonably good program.
That's good to know, because someone who's got a poor prognosis and no money, I mean, they've got nothing to lose in a way.
In the front of the page of the book, we have a page devoted to, it's a dedication page. This book is dedicated to the, and this is what it says in the book. This book is dedicated to, in the U.S., 500,000 people who died of cancer last year, and the 500,000 people next year who won't.
Right.
Because they read the book.
Well, that leads me on to my next question. So, somebody's listening, they're contemplating engaging with repurposing. I just want to give a sort of scale of importance of this approach, from nice to have or make you feel a bit better to lifesaver. Obviously, it can be different things for different people, but in general, where do you place repurposing along that spectrum?
We now have the ability to cure cancer with repurposed drugs. No one should die from cancer. Using our current understanding, our current knowledge, no one should die from cancer.
And I want to explore the relationship between repurposing and conventional treatment. I mean, conventional treatment, it's old-fashioned, as you say, but it has its virtues under some circumstances. And you yourself have talked about how you're effectively targeting two different, you've got two different pictures of what cancer is, actually. The people who are treating it conventionally have a different picture of what they're doing. But nonetheless, how well do these things work together? Can they actually be synergistic in getting somebody to a better place?
There are different levels. There are different, some patients would like to continue with their conventional oncologist, but, they would also want to take advantage of what the repurposed drug world has to offer, and that there are different variations along the spectrum. Some people will completely shift away from conventional oncology and go completely immersed into integrative oncology. And so you have all the variations in between, and you have to recognize that. And I think there's no question, and we talk about this in the book, people who still want to use chemotherapy, or maybe they've been using chemotherapy for a while and then realize it's not working, I keep getting recurrences, keep getting relapses of my lymphoma or sarcoma or whatever it is. And they realize that the problem with chemotherapy is every time you use it, there's additional added toxicity and to the heart, to the brain. And eventually the chemotherapy used over and over again will kill the patient. So the patients realize this. And so a lot of them will be sort of halfway through the chemotherapy years or months of chemotherapy, and come to the realization that, you know what, let's try something else. And they find out about repurposed drugs. Cancer patients are now interacting and communicating on message boards.
Correct.
They're finding out that people are having good results with repurposed drugs. A lot of the anti-parasitic drugs have very strong anti-cancer activity. We mentioned just a few minutes ago, a couple of old drugs, itraconazole and fenofibrate, excellent anti-cancer activity.
Right.
There are 300 of these at the drugstore. And, the cancer patients are learning that there's another world out there that uses newer thinking, newer technology, that's completely ignored by conventional oncology, which is stuck with an older technology from the 1940s. So this book is 30 years ahead of its time. And so, cancer patients could take advantage of the new science that's been developed. A lot of it developed by the, quote, war on cancer started by in the Nixon years, the Nixon administration. And they've dumped $100 billion through the NIH funding into basic science research. And again, here we're talking animal models, basic science, animal studies. And that's completely, all that work is completely ignored by conventional oncology.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is we take that $100 billion worth of research and we distill it, condense it, and put it into a book that's understandable and organized in a way that it can be used now.
But it's a fascinating time. All of this has happened in a decade, basically. It's come from pretty much nowhere, drug repurposing, to being something a lot of people with cancer know about, and they're sharing information about and using even.
Don't forget, I wrote this book 5 years ago.
Right, okay. You're in the middle of all that. Yeah. So, fantastic. We're out of time. Very interesting talk, Jeff. Thank you very much indeed. It's been a real pleasure to have you on my show. Thank you for sharing about it. If people want to find out more about you, you have a website which is rammed with resources, jeffrey-nd.com, and dash is spelled D-A-C-H. Did I get that all right?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, very good.
Very good.
Oh, I just wanted to mention that we do have some teaching videos. We have about 3 hours of teaching videos, all free on my website, jeffrey-md.com. We also have a free newsletter. So if the reader is on my blog website, remember to sign up for the free newsletter. Newsletter, stay in touch. We also have a contact page, if you're interested in the list of integrative oncologists that we've compiled over the years. Just shoot me an email using the contact page.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Dr. Dash.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I'm wishing you much success in the future with everything.
You too. Yeah, great. Thank you. Bye-bye, then.
Bye-bye, Robin.
It's extraordinary how much cancer care has moved forward in the last decade. There are great reasons to be optimistic about our ability to control even late-stage cancers now. Next, our attention needs to focus on prevention, as the numbers being diagnosed is something we're definitely not in control of. It's not so long until our autumn conference in London on September the 27th. These are always exciting events, showcasing the best practitioners and exploring highly relevant topics. This year is no exception, and we've joined forces with Mark Taylor of Patient-Led Oncology for the second time this year to put together a program with the title, What's Really Working? In contrast with the online conference earlier this year with the same title, this will be much more UK-centric, and as well as hearing from some of our best practitioners, you'll get to meet hundreds of other like-minded people and to interact with a range of practitioners and suppliers exhibiting at the event. To find out more and to book, go to our website, yestolife.org.uk, and look under the events menu.
Thanks so much for listening today. Please do listen again next week when I'll be back with another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.